Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, this is Chad Daniels, and you have landed in the middle of somewhere. Hello, thanks for coming back. Thanks for joining us. Maybe it's Monday, maybe it's Friday. I don't give a shit. I'm just glad you're listening. Across from me, this is 3 weeks in a row. Maybe, we don't know if we're going in order. But I'll tell you this, across from me, Cyrus Amundsen.
Hello everybody, my name is Cy Amundsen, and welcome to the middle of somewhere. This is my audition to be the lead host.
Denied. And not only is Cy here, we have a fantastic guest. Ladies and gentlemen, I would love to introduce you to Brian Miller.
Hello. Hey, guys. Hey,
thanks for being here. Really appreciate it.
Hi, Brian.
Yeah, glad to do it.
Yeah. Brian is a stand-up comedian in Minneapolis and just such a fantastic writer and such a funny, funny human being. Thrilled to have you on today. Now, what we do is we tell a story about, you know, how we met, how we know each other, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. Cyrus, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, yeah, because we've all known each other for 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've done shows together, like literally that week together.
Well, yeah, the three of us.
The three of us.
Yeah.
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 Well, I would like to, Brian is one of my good friends, and he's also not just a stand-up, he's a talented fiction writer, I was going to say journalist, but I don't think journalist is the right word. You're a critic, a lot of movie critic, and for a while, early on, you wrote stand-up previews for City Pages. This look on his face because he knows what stories, because Brian and I have become close, but for a year and a half before we became friends, I wanted to push him into a fire inside a shark's mouth.
It's so detailed.
For the pettiest of reasons, but when I was starting stand-up at Acme, the first week they hired me to do ever was with the Chad Dad. And
that's me.
And Andy Erickson.
And the concept was we were two new comics starting our career. So this was our first week at Acme. And Chad, as the grizzled and at that point chiseled veteran.
Crafty veteran, yep.
Yep. You were going to tell, we would open the show, and then you would tell stories from the road.
And it wasn't my stand-up. It was kind of like this. It was like the genesis of this podcast. I was just telling funny stories that happened on the road, but they weren't written out bits or anything like that.
I forgot about that part, yeah.
And Brian was the person writing the Go See It for City Pages. And he did the nice, not nice compliment thing where he wrote, this is the direct phrase, and this is so fucking pathetic that this is still in my brain.
This is the last thing you're going to remember before you die. You're going to be muttering this to your grandchildren. Brian Miller gave me a compliment that wasn't satisfactory. And then you'll shuffle off.
He wrote, and I was very sensitive.
I was.
He wrote, beneath his frat boy looks lies surprisingly surreal material, which Brian has such a nice way of words, but that's literally like, beneath his empty shell somehow lies a clever phrase or two.
And no, I don't agree with that at all, because everybody knows when a handsome person steps on stage, or the beautiful woman steps on stage, it's like you automatically think, oh, they're using this as a stepping stool to act.
Yes.
And it's going to be fucking mind numbing.
Yeah, and even when good looking people are usually funny sometimes, there's some very funny good looking people. It's usually not like surreal and weird. It's usually just like, you know, it's usually just like more straightforwardly delivered. And Cy was what you were like, you're like 21 and a half or something. You're older than that. You were like 26. You were prime out of college, and you're old.
I was probably 23. Yeah.
And your old material was honestly much weirder than your new material. Like, it was real different. Yeah. But it was very surreal. I mean, Chop Up That Donkey was the one that always stuck in my head.
Yeah, that was, yeah, when I started, before I got the fun drilled out of me, yeah, I was writing jokes, 8-minute jokes about an alligator going on trial and motivational speakers whose catchphrases was chop up that donkey. And I'm sure in this podcast situation, we're going to say, oh, what a nice compliment. But I'm going to tell you, it hurt me then, and I put it up. Because at that time, you have to remember, at Acme, I was different than everybody else, because everybody was really alternative and interesting and unique, like Brooks Robinson and Tommy Ryman, and I walk up there like this big fucking oaf that looks like I just came from Lifetime Fitness, and I was really proud of my material. So when you wrote that, even though you kind of said something nice about my material, I fucking like put that on the wall like I was some fucking hard knock boxer who nobody gave a choice, and I was like, someday I'm gonna kill his whole family.
I'll say this, I still think you were way oversensitive about it, but I will say this, frat boy is the wrong, I should have, there's some,
that's,
there's a better
that's
way to
what
say
triggered
than frat
me.
Boy. No, I understand,
that's what triggered me, because also I had gone, because I was just coming out of like mental health stuff and OCD and a college run where, like, I lived with my grandma and then my sister. And, like, I didn't drink. I fucking hated frat guys. And then I finally found this art I love. And here came this fucking squeege at the city pages. and then we've gone on to be lifelong friends. And I cannot wait for you to tell these stories.
Well,
let me tell you what. Beneath those bookworm looks of yours lies surprisingly interesting stories.
Here's the thing, though. That's true of me, too. And I've had to come to accept that, because I used to fight against the, oh, he looks like a nerd thing. And I do look like a nerd. And I am a little bit of a nerd, but not. I'm not like a Lord of the Rings nerd. I'm not, you know, like, I know ladies.
You're more of a literature nerd.
Yeah. I'm kind of an old-fashioned weirdo more than a nerd.
Brian and I had this moment. We were doing a podcast together like 4 years ago, and the show ended, and somehow we started talking about sitcoms on the show, and the conversation carried after the show. And I just looked at him, and I was like, we seem like the sort of people who one of our favorite shows would be The Office and the other would be Frasier. And that's exactly the fucking situation. Like, that is the descriptive through sitcoms. I am The Office, and Brian is Frasier. But we've gone too far on this. Chad, Dad, take this show out of my hands before I do what I do with every guest episode, which is detour it.
Well, I actually remember when you read that review, and you were so frustrated you slammed your jacket down on the couch, and then a bottle of Rohypnol fell out. And I was like, oh, well, I guess frat boy does apply here. Now we need to talk about this. Because I know Rohypnol doesn't help OCD, but I do know what it does. It fucking makes drinks taste funny there, Cosby.
Yeah, I was so angry. When I shot the semen, I missed the cookie that night. I was fucking furious.
Now, I have a completely different experience with Brian, because he wrote a bio for me, because I loved his way with words and you know, reading his stuff in the city pages and everything. And he wrote a bio for me, and it was so good, I couldn't use it all because I secretly hate parts of me. And so when I read it, I was like,
joke.
Well,
you want to talk about frat boy looks. Young Chad looked like he should be in a store window getting fucking, you know, with women outside diddling themselves. Chad was frat boy good looking before he put on that hat and beard.
Well, I don't know if you remember when we all did that week together at Acme, Sarah, the old manager, we were all like standing at the bar, and Sarah walked past and she goes, oh, it's cocky white asshole week.
I don't remember that, but dude, Sarah's funny. Sarah came with us to Hong Kong when we did that documentary, and she was just lights out funny the whole trip.
She's so funny. Yeah. Great man. Great. Yeah.
So normally, when there's a guest on, I do an obnoxious morning. Hey, everybody, this is Moose in the Morning. But I'm not going to do that to you today because Si's here and I don't want him to lose his
mind.
We're
going to miss it.
Oh, fuck off. So I read your list and I am fascinated by all three stories. So I don't even want to lead you. I just want you to tell these stories in any order you want and however you want. Now, just know you will get interrupted.
Yeah, of course.
But I am these stories, I mean, they look – I'm fascinated.
I'll give him – I can lead him on the first one because when I called him to ask him to be on the show, I was like, you know, just – bring some of your favorite stories, and we've got a really great audience. You know, just, you know, think of what you think might be good and put it on the show. And he goes, well, and then he said the following, like, one sentence from the first story he's going to tell. And I was like, yeah, you're going to be fine.
It is a tantalizing
So now that we've overhyped it and he can't live up to it, why don't you fucking dive your little bookworm ass into
it. It is a sweet setup because it is the true story is that my grandfather is the answer to an unsolved mystery, and I don't mean like a lowercase u lowercase m unsolved mystery. Like, oh, I wonder. I mean like Robert Stack introduced a mystery that was not solved that my grandpa solved because he was the answer. You guys remember Unsolved Mysteries? For everybody who doesn't know, quick primer, there was a show on TV. It was on like CBS or ABC. It's very popular. It was called Unsolved Mysteries. And Robert Stack.
They were so unsolved that they got you excited about solving a mystery by a fog machine.
Oh, yeah.
Smoking up under the words Unsolved Mystery.
Well, and Robert Stack would always step out of the fog to introduce the show. But he walked in places where there was like... like, where were you behind the fog? It's just like a field, and then he just like steps into a road, and you're like, what were you doing there before you? It was not good.
Is there a more enigmatic where you just step out of fog? I want to start stepping out of fog and asking people questions.
Yeah, and he had a trench coat on, which, you know, could go the wrong direction, but he was trusted because he was on the show The Untouchables. So this was right. An untouchable trench coat, not a please touch me trench coat. It was sort of a different thing. And so people loved Robert Stack. And the genius of Unsolved Mysteries, right? They would do three different mysteries in an episode. They'd be about 10 minutes each or whatever. And then at the very end, though, Robert Stack would always say, if you or anyone you know as in the information leading to the, you know, the finding of D.B. Cooper. And sometimes it would be D.B. Cooper, and sometimes it would be like some money disappeared from a bank in Kansas.
Sure.
Like, they had real range on the Unsolved
Mysteries. Shit. Hey, I have a question. Yeah. Wasn't it the deal where he started doing this because his son went missing?
No, that was John
Walsh.
That's
the most
from
wanted.
America's Most Wanted.
Oh, okay.
Adam Walsh was like the kid who, like, I think his kidnapping was the one that led them to put kids on milk cartons. You know, they would put the Are You Missing? I think he was the original milk carton kid. But yeah, Adam Walsh going missing. And then John Walsh founded the group and then started America's Most Wanted.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha.
Yet somehow Nancy Grace's partner gets murdered, and all she does with it is play judge and jury on national television for people who haven't yet been convicted.
Oh yeah.
Why do I have a vendetta against Nancy?
They get like worse with each iteration. Like John Walsh started off like pretty like well-meaning at least. Although I don't think he did a lot of people favors. Call a narc on your neighbors because it starts off Adam Walsh is missing, and pretty soon it's like this guy sold cocaine. Does he live in the apartment next to you? Like that's how they always
I mean,
do.
Yeah, that's how it always happens. I remember playing hockey growing up, and you would be at an outdoor rink for practice, and you'd practice on Saturday before the game. Mm-hmm. And now kids are practicing 6 days a week.
Yeah.
I mean, or like Joey Tribbiani on Friends. He started off kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. And then by the last season, he was a full-blown fucking idiot.
Everything spirals to a worse version
Absolutely.
Of itself.
Or kind of like this podcast. We started out telling stories, and now we just turn on the mic and do Southern voices for 40 minutes and then go take a nap.
Hey, man, I don't know what you're talking about. But anyways,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Let's go. No, I don't know what you're talking
Let
about.
Let me tell you what. I have no clue what it is that you're currently talking about.
You became a different Southern guy. That was what was fun. You actually transitioned from one Southern guy to another guy from the same town.
Yeah. So, we don't like Nancy Grace. John Walsh is a narc bitch, and we're on Unsolved Mysteries.
Right. Robert Stack is just a paid. I think you know no one could have known. Oh, by the way, the other one was Rescue 911. That was the counterpart, which was William Shatner telling you right. stories of like bad things that happened to people while they play the actual 911 tapes under the guise of like 911 awareness, which was actually a thing in the 80s. Remember that when it was like, yeah. everybody 911. It was such a big important thing. So, so Robert Stack, but sometimes on Unsolved Mysteries, they would get kind of out there. Like sometimes it would be really small stuff, but sometimes it would be like, does Bigfoot exist or something? They would go kind of wild. And they would do theme episodes. And one year they did a theme episode right around Christmas that was like miracles and angels or something like that. Kind of holiday theme, kind of spiritual theme.
Love it.
Right? And so on this holiday spiritual themed episode, it was a really big deal because my grandparents' friends were going to be on the show. And this story, okay. this will also be an important detail to a story I tell later, but I'm from a town of about 5,000 people. That's where I like went to grade okay. school. That's where most of my family lives. It's a very small town.
You know, since you have an aside here, I'd like to hop in and say, should we start doing themed episodes?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know. Listeners, you tell us.
That's true. You can do different guests, different themes. Oh, yeah, there's a lot. Yeah. We'll call Robert Stack. He'll set you up. Trust me. So, it was a huge deal. No one, when you're from a town that small, like, it's a big deal to hear a town that you know of mentioned on a TV show. Like, once sure. you live in a city, you get used to, like, oh, Mary Tyler Moore was here, or, you know, whatever. But, like,
yeah.
when you're in these tiny towns, it was like, if they mentioned Springfield, Illinois, this was in Southern Metropolis, Illinois, you'd be like, oh, my God, they mentioned Springfield on L.A. Law.
Right.
We're famous now. Like, so it was a huge deal that my grandparents' friends were going to be on the episode. And so not only are they going to be on TV, but they are or have an unsolved mystery, which is itself pretty interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's a big deal. So because it's kind of a thing, we're all going to go watch it at my grandparents' house. I mean, we all live very close together. It's a small town. So it was like me okay. and my mom and my dad and my aunt and uncle, and my grandma and grandpa. There's probably 8 or 9 people in the living room sitting, gathered around the TV, watching Unsolved Mysteries, waiting for these, I can't remember their names, waiting for this nice old couple to come on. And the nice old couple comes on and they're really nice. And the story the nice old couple tells on Unsolved Mysteries is they're very hard luck, you know, classic, you know, moved to Florida, fixed income, you know, mm-hmm. middle class people sure. trying to like grind out their retirement. And this homeless guy came to their door asking for work, and they didn't really have any work for him, but the lady like baked him some food and made some sandwiches, and they made him a nice food bag, and they gave him some clothes that they thought would fit him, and they just, you know, they just sort of helped him out as best they could, even though they have very limited sure. means, and they sent him on his way. And then a few months later, right before Christmas, they got a cashier's check in the mail for, I think it was $1,000 or maybe $2,000. And then every year after that, right around Christmas, they would get another anonymous cashier's check for like $2,000. So at the end of the story, Robert Stack comes on and he's like, could it be some benevolent Christmas miracle worker is testing people to see their faith? Or could it be the guardian angel? You know, like they want to play this up, you know. And even if you or anybody you know has any information about the guardian angel or whatever. And so we're watching this and like the people are on TV and we're all happy. And then my grandpa's just sitting back there and he's like, oh, bullshit. He's just so irritated. And he's a nice old man, and he's just so annoyed. And I was like, what's up with grandpa? And my grandma's like, oh, your grandpa, he gets that way. And I never really found out why he was so mad until many years later, after he died, my mom's like, oh, I guess now that he's dead, I can tell you. And I was like, what's that? So my grandpa knew this old guy from Florida because they were in the Navy together. And they like saw serious combat in the Pacific, and they were really close. And my grandpa was a really charitable guy. He owned a funeral home, but he genuinely believed that charity should never be known. It should always be purely anonymous. So like when he would see women whose like husbands would die or whatever, he knew, because he was a funeral director, he would make a list and then he would drive around and he would anonymously give them money, like checks and stuff in the mail, because he didn't want anyone to know it was him. He was just a really great dude, but he truly hated like showy charity. He was like a old school hardcore World War II dude. And he knew that his friend would never take money that he sent them. He knew it would, you know, they were these World War II buddies. They were, you know, you don't take money, you don't take charity, you know. But he knew the guy was struggling. And so just because this is what he did, he sent this guy an anonymous cashier's check. And he had no idea. It, just because the guy was a nice person, through sheer coincidence, he had helped a homeless guy. So then my grandfather decided to make it a habit every year. And the reason the check came on the same day is because it was on my grandpa's to-do list on his like calendar. It was up like every like December 10th. He's like, oh, got to send that check. And he would send a check. And he did it every year for like 7 years. But then when he saw it on Unsolved Mysteries, he was so irritated that his friend believed in guardian angels, he stopped sending the checks. He was like, no more. And that's why he was just furious. He couldn't believe that this guy believed in guardian angels. He was like, we saw combat in the Pacific. Like, we've seen things. He's like, you think?
Oh, that's so great. I like to think that this homeless guy is getting all of this credit for being a guardian angel and paying it back. And the homeless guy's actually like, oh, these sandwiches they made me should get me one town away to that family I wanted to murder.
Yeah.
And so there's a completely other side of Unsolved Mysteries that the homeless guy is the answer. And your grandpa's just like, fuck this.
I'm sure you loved your grandpa a lot because that's what grandpas are for. But are you kind of upset that you missed out on an all-time call someone on their convictions bullshit opportunity where it's like, wait, you hate, like, you insist on this not being known, and I know that you didn't want it to be a guardian angel, but you couldn't handle that the credit was going somewhere. Like, he didn't want the credit to go to himself, but
no, he didn't
you had an
credit.
Opportunity.
He thought it was, like, uncool. He was like, so if you really think this is a guardian angel, you're going to pimp it out to be on Robert Stack's NBC show? He like kind of like the way that giving charity, like the miracle of giving should be private. Like, don't be showy about the fact that you get it because you think God chose you because you gave a guy a sandwich. Like, it just like irritated him at like a moral level. It just drove him crazy.
How much did it irritate you when you got $1,000 after he died and you're like, where the fuck's all this money? He owned a funeral home. People have been dying every day since he bought the fucking place.
Totally separate charitable story about my grandpa that's very fast, which is he and a buddy, because small town, so basically anybody died in this town, this is the funeral home you wind up in. And he owned the one, right? So he knew everybody in town. And one day he was at a funeral for some, I don't even know who, and he was with his old buddy, about his same age. And he's talking to the guy, and the guy jokes that, well, one of these days, you know, I'm just going to drop dead here in the funeral home, and I'll save you the trouble of transporting me to the morgue or whatever. And my grandpa jokingly said to him, if you do that, I'll do it for free. And then, like, 10 years later, no kidding, at a funeral for a very close loved one, this guy who, in great emotional distress, literally George Jefferson style, grabs his chest, I'm coming, Rebecca, and he collapses, and he dies in my grandpa's funeral home, face down on the carpet during another funeral. And so then the lady, the widow, comes to my grandpa to, like, you know, well, I got to square up for the funeral. And then grandpa's like, no, this is free. And he tells her the story, and she's like, well, obviously that was a joke. And he was like, look, I don't want to mess with any universal things, but he's like, I said this was going to be free, and he died here. We're doing this square. We're calling it a watch. And he did the funeral for free.
Yeah, if that guy gets a job running one of the doors in heaven, and your grandpa charges his widow for the funeral after they made that deal.
Because he was like, what are the chances? Like, no one has ever died in the funeral home before. It's like, this never happened, you know?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, he gets up there, and they're just like, oh, it says here, number one, you don't believe in guardian angels. And number two, you don't keep your fucking word.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Guess what?
He was just trying to keep
also,
on
also, listeners, we don't want your messages. We already told you Brian is a Frasier guy, clearly not a Jeffersons or Sanford and Sons.
Sanford
guy.
And Sons, yeah.
So listen.
You're right. Yeah.
our listeners will find the smallest error, and then all of a sudden it's all we hear about for 2 weeks.
I'm loving the fact that Brian mentioned guardian angels because he's about to get some paragraphs from listeners about their experiences. Send them his way, everybody.
You're about to get the full fucking lyrics from an Alabama song. Oh, I believe there are angels among us.
This is a bummer of a show. The fact that we just both pulled that off the way we did is that's a bummer.
I know a lot of Alabama songs, but not that one. I'm happy about it. I'm not going to lie.
I saw Alabama when they were all in their, I don't know, early 100 and teens. at WeFest in like 2012. Worst show. I would have rather have seen the state, the whole state of Alabama put on a concert.
WeFest, here's a story about WeFest. There's their campground. So this is a country music festival, if you don't know, and it is in northern Minnesota. It's about an hour from where I live, a place called Sioux Pass Ranch. And at one of the campgrounds one year, someone painted a bowling ball to look like just like a soccer ball.
Didn't I tell this story on the fucking show?
Oh, you did?
I think I did. I think I told you this story. Yeah. No, keep going.
No, I heard the story because everyone
fucking
came
separately.
Everyone came back and they were like, his foot didn't even look like a foot.
It shattered.
It had all the bones were exploded.
That I was there for that.
I didn't know. Did you paint the soccer ball? That sounds like something you'd do.
No, I did not. Come on, don't you put that on me.
I will put that.
That is a genius prank.
Do you know, because it's where my WeFest is from, you know, it's in Detroit Lakes, which is where my dad grew up. Do you know why it's called WeFest? I assumed it was something stupid where like there'll be a lot of us. Hey, what about us fest? Lot of us fest. No, that ain't gonna do it.
The W and the E stand for something,
know.
Right?
And unless it's the first letters of Western, so it's like Western Festival. I don't
West,
know.
West. Oh yeah, Western Festival.
But I honestly don't know.
Is that spelled OUI the French way? Ah, oui fest.
Yeah. Oui fest.
What about them fest? Well, no, because we don't want none of them coming around. It's us. Well, we already crossed us fest off the list.
I just looked up that soccer ball story, and the person that they blame for painting the soccer ball, Guardian Angel. It's another unsolved mystery.
It is an unsolved mystery. I guess no one knows who painted the soccer ball, right?
I believe that man limps around concerts.
Oh, I'm not doing this.
Are you sure?
Brian, can you tell another story before Cy keeps singing?
Well, the Alabama thing actually is a good mood music for it. Because I mentioned I come from a town of about 5,000 people. And when people are like, because people don't really know where the South is, as weird as that sounds. Everyone thinks the South is Alabama. I'm like, no, the South stretches way up into Missouri, right? The South is a lot of places, you know, but in the Southern Illinois is the South. And people are like,
I would argue Southern Illinois, Southwestern Indiana, mm-hmm. Southeastern Ohio, and Northern Kentucky are about as South gets.
I completely agree.
There's something about this area where you're like, this is more Mississippi than Mississippi.
Yeah, and this is something I've said on stage before, but it's like, you live in a state that touches a lake that touches Canada. Get the fucking accent out of your mouth, you dumb dicks.
Yeah, and then the Southern Illinois accent sounds way more like a Kentucky accent. Then, you know, the top of Illinois is that weird Chicago thing heading into Milwaukee. It's like, it's a weird state.
Yeah.
And Southern Illinois is really like a separate state from Northern Illinois. It's really two places.
It is crazy because you go to the top and it's like, hey guys, thanks for coming to Chicago. Mm-hmm. We're just going to go up there. And then you go down and it's like, oh, hey, y'all listen. It's like,
yeah,
no. We're in the same.
In 1 6-hour car drive, you go from,
state.
I played minor league baseball, and now my wife and I live in an apartment, and, you know, we don't get along great, to, she better get along great. Yeah. That's a 6-hour drive.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty wild. And so I'm from the South, people are often a little skeptical. And I always say, well, if I'm not from the South, how come my stepmom's teeth came in the mail? So I have suffered for many years under my dad's romantic inclinations. My dad, which could be a different kind of story, but it's not that kind of story. My dad has just bad taste in ladies and just a bad time with women. And I've been there for it. You know, he's married to my mom for a long time. That went pretty well. And they got divorced. And after that, he had a hard time. And he met this lady at the Elks Club. She was the bartender at the Elks Club. And that's kind of was his.
Hell yeah. Spot.
Yeah,
my dad's an elk. Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I used to drink. Oh, I didn't drink. I used to hang out at the Elks. You know, shoot a little pool with the other kids while our dads pounded brewskis at the underneath all the deer heads and whatnot.
You know what's a bummer about marrying the bartender from the Elks Club though? You have to listen to all your friends tell you about how they fucked.
Yes, that is 100% accurate story. It's also, you know,
I mean,
yes, yeah.
It's absolutely true. I mean, it's like a, It's like a who got her first fest at the wedding.
It's like, hey, you guys see that doormat I walked across on the way through the room? It's like, yeah, guess what everybody did on our way into the bar?
At the wedding, instead of at the dollar dance, they just all your friends from the bar come up and give, just like, I should give you 20 for what I did to her.
Well, I'll just, I hate to shit on your premise, but the wedding occurred in Las Vegas and they were married by a guy dressed as Elvis, so that there was no traditional ceremony.
Really ruins it. That really ruins it, yeah.
I love, he walks in, he's just like, you see my wife's bangs? They are looking sharp tonight. And another guy's just like, yeah, that's my jizzing.
She was a rough lady. And here's the thing I realized when I was like later on, because when you're like eight, you don't think of this, but when you're like older, you're like, wait a minute. If you marry the bartender at the place that you go to drink when you're having a bad time, you can't, now you have nowhere to go when you're having a bad time. That's it. You're done. Everywhere you go, you're having a bad time. And this didn't last very long, by the way. This was a couple of year mistake. And then, you know, it became rather clear that this was a poor choice.
I see him walking in and he's just like, hey, can I get a beer? Not from you. Yeah. Not from you. Not right now.
It's funny, he like was ever like a big drinker, but he like quit drinking. He didn't really drink after that. And I honestly think he was like, well, I can't go to the Elks anymore. I guess I'm just a soda pop guy now. Yeah, I'm just gonna go sit on the porch and smoke. But this lady Cheryl was her name. She was a very mean lady. She was very, very crazy. And far and away the craziest thing about her was that she decided she needed to get new teeth. But she saw this commercial on TV that said you could get dentures in the mail. And they're much cheaper than regular dentures. It. Here's the thing about getting dentures in the mail is there's a couple of parts that you kind of can't do via mail, you know?
Sure.
And the number one thing is that you can't have any teeth in your head when you get said dentures. So here's how teeth in the mail work. Was you send away for your teeth in the mail kit. And your teeth in a brick of clay, a big, it looks like a styrofoam brick kind of thing, shows up in this box.
I had to do that for my feet because last year I had plantar fasciitis real bad. Mm-hmm. So your stepmom got teeth like I got inserts for my shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Right, right. It's the same, right? You make an impression of your foot. Now we have this like custom thing. Well, to make dentures, you got to make a custom impression of your mouth. So, but she had teeth, by the way. She had like bad teeth, but like she wasn't any toothless person. But that's the thing about dentures, right? There's no middle ground. So the first thing she has to do is go to this dentist who pulls every single tooth out of her head.
Oh,
but like
that.
once all the teeth have been pulled out of your head,
woof.
That takes a while to recover from. So you can't just go get your dentures. So there's like a period where she's just toothless and like in recovery with like literally no teeth in her head.
I guarantee you one of your dad's friends is like, wish I would have waited for this for her to suck my
there's
dick.
No way those jokes weren't made. I would bet $10,000 on this. So then
for sure.
One night she heats up. It's time for the impression.
Did she lose her job? Because I assume she's the sort of bartender, if she was working at the Elks, that she cracks the bottles with her teeth.
You know, she quit working as soon as she got married. I think she retired from Elks bartending.
Smart girl.
Smart.
Yeah. And so she puts the, I remember being there, she put the clay thing in the oven and puts it on like 125 degrees or whatever. And then she takes it out and then she just opens this like big, ragged, red, toothless maw. And you just bite into it as deep and as far as you can. And you have to like leave your mouth in it for like 30 seconds or whatever. And then you take it out and it's all slobbery and you put it back on the cookie sheet and you put it back in the oven. And then you turn it up to like 250 and you got to like bake it into like it's like hardened form or whatever. Then you take it out and then you put it back in the box. And you wrap the box up, you put it in the mail. Here's the thing. Mail order dentures don't come the next day or the next week. In fact, it's like a 12-ish week process. So now you've got this like solid 3-month span of just absolute toothlessness. And so for 3 months, every single night, we had pureed chicken, mashed potatoes, and canned green peas. That was what was on tap.
I bet you were pretty svelte at that point.
Yeah, you get pretty tightened up on that, you know, on the mashed chicken diet. Like I didn't know you could mash chicken. You can mash chicken if you're really, really determined. Part of me was like, why are we mashing our chicken? Why is it all mashed? You could eat it like chewing tobacco. You could like put a plug of chicken under your jaw and then just like go do some errands.
As somebody who had a tooth pulled, like a tooth,
mm-hmm.
and was pretty dramatic about it. I can't imagine.
Did you not like the review that Dennis gave of your tooth?
Yeah, losing every single fucking yikes. That's a real yikes for me.
Yeah.
He just leans over and he's like, "Well, you're not going to look like a frat boy anymore."
I got to say though, I was really excited when that box showed back up, because that meant we were back to shake and bake. You know, like we got a little crisp back in the chicken.
Yeah, you got something chewable.
It was thrilled.
Chewables.
It was huge. I was like, we didn't have as many popsicles around anymore, but you know.
I love how you sent your stories to us, because sometimes when we get stories, kind of the surprise is written in there, and yours has not been written in here. And so that is why I'm overly excited for the next story, because I'm wondering what the surprise is here. And I'm kind of getting antsy.
All right.
Let me tee it up. Hey, Brian, you went to a small town trash school like Chad and I. How
yes,
was that
I
experience
did.
For you?
It was, so this was a little farther. We moved to a slightly bigger town. So I went to I bet about the same size school you went to, you know. My graduating class was like maybe 200 people. But you know, it was still a small town, so it was the full range of experience, you know. And we had a lot of criminals in our class. My friend Eric killed his parents with a shotgun.
What?
Yeah,
wait,
yeah.
What?
Seventh grade. He was sitting next to me, PE. Eric Phillips killed his dad and stepmom with a shotgun, and then went on the lam with his girlfriend Bonnie and Clyde style. That's not the story. That's just the thing.
That's not the fucking story. What are you talking about? A seventh grader?
He probably
did.
Eric Phillips
a car?
Probably got so sick of listening to his dad's friends talking about how they fucked his stepmom that he was just like, I'm done. I can't listen to this anymore.
Yeah, he said next
so
time
a he... kid. A kid that you went to seventh grade with and sat next to blasted his parents with a shotgun and then took his seventh grade girlfriend and fled in a vehicle, question mark?
Yes, absolutely. Well, they were caught a couple of states away, kind of Bonnie and Clyde style.
Was that like the biggest story in your town's history forever?
You know what's weird? The bigger the story, the less people talked about it. Like, people would talk endlessly about
the repressed
about,
whites. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But, like, whenever something real happened, like, it would, like, there was this other girl who ran off with this pedophile to Florida, and then they had to, like, send the FBI back to bring her back. And then it was just weird because, like, she'd been living with this pedophile in Florida for, like, 3 months, and it was national news. And then she's just like, I'm back in math class. And it was real strange.
I think what's real strange is neither of those things are on your fucking list of stories.
Yeah, what the fuck is happening? You know, I'll get to this story that's on my list here. But we had a kid named Ricky who got four teachers pregnant and then hung himself in the principal's basement. Well, you know, it's normal small town stuff, so we didn't talk about it a bunch.
But I wasn't involved in those. You know, that was just stuff I witnessed from
that's,
the side.
That's
but
fair.
I,
those aren't Brian's stories.
Right. So that's why this one, this school story was probably more, which was, I mean, someone dies, if it makes you feel better. Someone doesn't survive this. A teacher doesn't make it to the end of the story.
I mean, it doesn't make me feel better, but it raises the stakes to the level of the previous stories.
There will be a corpse at the end of the story. There will be an innocent victim.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So don't worry.
If
corpses
you
are
have
coming.
Any, if you or anyone you know have any information...
Well, I know who killed Mr. Fred, and I technically was part of the group, but I don't carry personal blame for what happened to Mr. Fred. So I was in this class in eighth grade. I was in this class. It was a year after Eric Phillips killed his parents. I was in this class, and it was just like
thank you for timelining it.
But a year before the girl ran off to Florida, if that helps. So it was one of those classes where, like, I just remember showing up to that day. You know, you have like six classes or whatever, and this is my like social studies class. And I just walked in the room, and I was like, every criminal from the school is in this class, along with me and my friend Dave. It was just like everybody in there had been to juvie. Multiple kids in that class already had their own kids. You know, we're eighth grade. This was like none of these kids are making it to high school. I mean, I honestly, I don't think half of those kids made it to the end of high school. It was like the pretty gritty. Part of me thinks that like the guidance counselor who makes up the schedule was like, look, let's just make one class really bad, and then all the rest of them can be okay. And somehow me and Dave got put in this class. And so not only was almost everyone in the class a criminal, but the teacher was also a criminal, which we didn't know at the time. We would only find that out later. I'll just say his name is Mr. C, because I think he's out of jail now. So since Mr. C's out of jail, I don't know what he's up to now. I liked Mr. C, despite his criminal inclinations. And Mr. C was clearly insane, and he hated kids, and he would do this weird thing where he took 2 weeks off of like what you're supposed to study, and he would teach us his philosophy. And for 2 weeks, we like learned this elaborate philosophy that he had like heavily written out and annotated, which was like combination of like self-help statistics and weird mathematic equations. And like, I wish I had my notes from that class for reasons.
Me
that
too.
I really do. Cause I remember at the time as a kid being like, I think he's onto something. I think he's got it. You know, I remember thinking like, this is important stuff, you know? And so Mr. C was out for a little while, and for like a few days, and so they gave us this substitute teacher named Mr. Fred, and Mr. Fred looked like Mr. Belvedere if he had suffered some oxygen deprivation for a little while. Like, he was a little old man in a bow tie and a suit in a pretty rough school class, you know, and then he like had a little bit of a speech impediment. He moved a little slow. Maybe he had like a stroke or something at some point.
is Fred his first or last name?
Oh,
is he
definitely
Jeff Fred?
His first name. For sure.
Oh, so he's one of those fucking creeps. Like,
yeah.
I'm Mr. Tommy. You're like, all right, well, keep your fingers away from my asshole, you weirdo.
Well, he was like a really sweet old man, but he was like total pushover.
Oh, so he was old enough that the Mr. Fred made sense.
He was old. Yeah. He was like,
yeah, you don't want to be like 38 and go, call me Mr. Fred.
No. And you know what?
Yeah, because then you're like, oh, thanks for sending our classmate back from Florida after you lived with her. That was nice.
Yeah. After that, you're just Fred. I'm dropping the mystery. I'm not giving you the honorific right. At that point. But you know, I don't know about you guys, but in my town, like, it was so small, there were only so many substitute teachers. So like, as a kid, we had a pretty good intuition of like who the bottom of the barrel was, because you would get a lot of the same substitutes across different classes in different years.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, this dude's gonna wind up being a teacher, or like, this guy was and he retired, but he like knows his stuff. And then sometimes it was like, oh, this is an old man that they've sent to babysit us. Mr. Fred was like good for little kids, but for he had no business dealing with the older kids. He was just too old for it. But and this class of criminals just saw him come in, and it was just like, it's on, baby. And like, you just knew you could do whatever you wanted. And people went like truly like Lord of the Flies. Like, the thing I remember was like a chair flying over my head and crashing into the chalkboard and the chalkboard falling. I mean, it was like tearing stuff down.
Holy
almost
shit.
Like instant riots. Like this was about 5 minutes into the
school.
Into the
school in the movie Dangerous Minds. What the
yeah,
fuck
it was. It was
happening?
Like it was like juvie, because all these kids, most of these kids had been to juvie or would soon go to juvie. So there was kind of that mentality, and people just immediately going to the teacher's desk, just it's all on. It's just full on Lord of the Flies. And Mr. Fred gets up and he's like stammering, and he's just like really beside himself. He's like stammering and stuttering, and he looks all whatever, and he wanders out, and we're like, Mr. Fred's going to get the principal. So now it's just like kids are like, let's see how much stuff we can tear out before the principal gets here. So now stuff's going starts going real wild. They're really tearing stuff down because everyone's assuming we're screwed anyway, and the principal's coming, and me and Dave are just sitting there riding it out. But then like the principal doesn't, like 5 minutes go by, 10 minutes go by, and people like get tired of tearing stuff up.
I'm exhausted.
At a certain point, they've already gone through a bunch of Mr. C's papers. They've already, you know, we've already like torn, taken posters off the walls. They've rearranged, but they've already done all this like petty stuff. You know, it's kind of done. And we're just sitting there and people just get bored. And then actually everybody sits down and gets really orderly because like there's nothing to rebel against. Like we're just in this room. A couple of people just decided to leave, but most people needed to go to their next class. So they stayed. So we just stayed, and then the bell rang and then we left. And then later on, a teacher came in to my next class and said, does anyone know where Mr. Fred is? Class was still empty. Well, it turns out that Mr. Fred was like a pretty severe diabetic, and the stress reaction that he had to this class like sent him into like a diabetic spell, and nobody knew this. And he wandered out, it was in the winter, and he wandered out onto the football field in the snow and sat down in the snow. And the snow fell on him for a while until somebody found him, and he got pneumonia, and then 3 days later he died. And it was so bad we didn't get punished.
No. I have to tell you something. I take back that I want a corpse at the end of this little old man.
I need Mr. Fred to live.
I absolutely thought it was going to be your criminal teacher, Mr. C.
No. Yeah, I need Mr. Fred to live.
Mr. Fred does not make it to the end of the story.
Dude, and he clearly died right near Christmas time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough.
You're laughing so hard at this.
I mean, it's so awful. It really was. It was the worst thing I've ever seen. And actually, yeah, it was the worst thing I've ever seen this class, like, do. And it was so bad. Like, they like, didn't know how to punish us. They like, there was no, because it was like, nobody could prove any one
That's
person
nuts.
Did anything. What did we do? Right?
No. You guys should all be in prison right now.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. I can charge at least the kid who threw the chair.
Yeah, I don't
think
know
that you guys.
Send that guy to live in Florida with Mr. Pedophile.
You're going to have to narrow it down in Florida.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, I have great news for everybody. I got to go.
Hey, I have terrible news for everybody. Chad left. Mr. Fred is dead, and I don't know what to do.
Oh, I'll just throw it in real quick. Mr. C, by the way, it turned out all that philosophy he was telling us was basically the pitch that he gave to his Ponzi scheme people, and it turned out he'd been running an elaborate Ponzi scheme for years, and he went to jail for many years for white-collar financial fraud. So he's the one person in that class that I know went to prison.
Jeepers fucking creepers. Brian, we love your stand-up. Where can people find your stuff?
I'm on Twitter at Real Brian Miller, spelled with a Y. Brian Miller Comedy, Brian with a Y.
And do you have Instagram too, right?
I do, yeah. Funny Brian Miller on Instagram, that's right. Yeah.
They love the Instagram. I know. So check Brian out in all those places. I know you can check Chad out on tour by going to his website and seeing where he's at right now. And you can find me, you know, probably mourning Mr. Fred until our next episode.
R.I.P.
Dude, I have to go. I have to go.
Hey, if you guys like this, there will be a new episode next Monday and every single Monday at 8 a.m. So click the subscribe button so your phone sends it to you without having to do any work.